The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to the Your Favorite Band Podcast, a podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. My name is Bran.
And over here...
Who is it?
I thought you'd do it. Dave.
Oh, Dave, is that you?
Mm-hmm.
You're a long lost pal. You son of a gun.
People say you couldn't love me, but I like to think you could.
Oh my goodness. Hey, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about just how much I care about you and also this podcast, and I just haven't said it in a while. I've kind of been keeping that a secret, and I don't want to keep secrets. I want to be open and honest. So I was wondering if you wanted to be honest with me and tell me how you're feeling about this whole friendship and podcasting relationship we have.
I feel strong about it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Dave, we've got a lot going on right now. We've got episodes upon episodes. We're starting out. Do you understand what's going on, Dave, with the your next favorite band? Do you understand that, the whole thing?
I thought I did until this question.
Okay.
What is it, really?
So not at all. Well, tell me how you understand it, and then I'll... try to correct it, because I don't want there to be any confusion about the difference between...
Like, this is the most confusing way to introduce it, but I'll do
it. Well, I just don't want people... I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory. Like, there's the Your Favorite Band podcast, and then on off weeks, we introduce your next favorite band, a smaller band, and we interview them.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So based just on title alone, I would say your next favorite band would be, as opposed to the bands that you already love... an introduction to bands that you might one day love. So more of an introductory.
Yeah.
So smaller bands that are less likely to have been heard.
Yeah. And here's the fun thing. The fun thing about the Your Favorite Band podcast is, you know how many bands there are in the freaking universe?
Uh-huh.
Too many.
What did you say? Do I know?
Yeah. Do you know?
I have a rough estimate.
Okay, go.
You sure?
Yeah.
Worldwide. And are you including solo artists?
Including solo artists.
Okay. 36 million.
Wow. So even if we were to just do the Your Favorite Band podcast, we acknowledge the fact that there's going to be some bands you don't know. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. But what we also want to do is for those smaller artists, we're like putting like, it's gotta be less than like 10,000 fans on Facebook. Cause that's like that's a smaller number. It's gotta mean just the thousands. And, we want you guys to be like, boy, I didn't know, but now I know. And you know how there's kind of like that pride that you have when you know an artist before they get big. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Who's that one artist for you, Dave, that you're like, I knew him?
There's not really just one. I have a couple that I feel that way, that I just realize, oh boy, they really got bigger.
Yeah.
I'll say the two that come to mind. One was the Godier.
Yeah. I remember you playing me that song, that one song by them that was
the,
was
it? I guess that he's not necessarily huge even now.
Yeah, but that one song did the duty.
But I remember thinking, like, this one's going to get it.
Yeah, and I was never on board. I don't know if you remember that. I was never on board with that one. And
you never even were after it got popular?
Even when it was got popular, I was like, I don't understand why this is popular. Like, it doesn't make sense in the realm of what is normal. But also, I don't like it for me personally.
Mm.
And that's okay.
But another one would probably have been the 21 Pilots. They really got big.
Oh, you're going to be one of those ones that claim it?
You just asked me to claim it.
Oh, you're going to be one of the... Oh, well, let me guess. You were a big fan of Car Radio before it was on the radio?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I would say mine, for me, NSYNC. I was early on.
No way.
Yeah, no, I was early on in that one.
I don't even know what early on was for them. I thought they like pretty much instantly were famous.
Yeah. I was also, I think...
the members were famous before.
Yeah, kind of in that same vein, O-Town for me. Do you remember O-Town?
Mm-mm.
What are you eating?
What do you mean by it? Like the... I'm not to the second question, to the first one. Do I know what O-Town is?
Yeah, not the city. Not like, hey, you go to O-Town later? Which like we said many a times growing up.
No. In that case, no. Because right. I do know about that
so
one.
So there was another boy band called O-Town, and they were created on a TV show called Making the Band.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So I watched that show, so I consider that like kind of early on, you know? Mm. Like literally, I was there another when one? They were starting.
Another one for me would have been... probably like Britney Spears.
No, Dave, now you're being facetious. And I'm not
you're
having
facetious.
It.
Facetious?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Mickey Mouse Club. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of the Mickey Mouse Club.
Well, how about... I knew which ones were going to get famous. All of them.
Can you name anyone else in the Mickey Mouse Club besides Britney? Who else?
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling was in the Mickey Mouse Club?
Yeah.
You only and know also, that because you watched a La La Land documentary or something like that.
No, not that reason.
Does that exist?
Also, JT.
Johnny Tsunami?
Johnny Timberlake.
Do you remember Johnny Tsunami?
Yeah. Of course, Prem.
Sorry. I don't want to be brash here. Anyways.
Yeah, don't. Not here. You can't do it here.
No. Dave, I don't know how it's been in New York weather-wise, but here in South Carolina, it's been super annoying. Like,
oh no!
One day in the 70s, the next day in the 50s, and you're like, my body like cannot.
That actually sounds nothing even close to as extreme as New York is.
Oh, tell me about New York, Dave. Tell me about it.
The highs are higher, the lows are lower. I'll say... that in within one day you'll have up to like almost the 70s and then it'll go down to the 20s.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry.
Maybe more like early 30s.
I'm so sorry.
Maybe not all the way down to the 20s.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you should be.
Okay, anyways, we're going to stop it.
I'm not the one that was complaining. Though,
I'm complaining because the pollen has already shot out of the nub.
Politics of it?
No, the pollen has already shot off the nibs of the trees, and I'm not having it.
I actually think that's funny because I went to Central Park, and there was like some trees, the cherry blossoms had bloomed.
Yeah.
Like maybe one out of 15. And so it was just like some of them got tricked into thinking it was spring, but it's not spring yet. And so now they're just kind of suckered into it. And now they just have to kind of thrive in the cold.
Yes.
All those blossoms.
Yes. It's a freaking mess, and I'm not having it.
And it's just like me. I put it on, like, in the same way, I bloom my shorts.
Yeah.
And I have my shorts on.
Exactly.
And then I get the same jokes on me.
Like, I only have so much room for, like, I only have so much jeans and pants space. And when I start whipping out the shorts, I start to retire some pants sometimes. And like,
what does it mean for a pair of jeans to be retired in the world of brand?
Yeah, it just means like put under like the bed somewhere. Just gotta toss it under there. And then when it gets hot again, when it gets hot or when it gets cold again, out of nowhere, I gotta crawl on my knees, crawl under the bed.
I want to go to your house during the summer and just look under your bed and see a bunch of jeans.
That's where jeans gonna die. And also just random like cheese wrappers and whatnot.
Oh.
God bless my wife. She sticks with me even through the...
That's her bed.
It is her bed. Her side is immaculate. My side looks like someone just like...
is ruffled.
Yeah, it looks like I'm still a child.
Okay.
Anyways, Dave, are you ready for today? Are you ready for the show?
Let's get right for today.
Let's get to it. People have been emailing us off the hook, if that's a thing that can happen. And when you can do that too, yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. See what I did? And people have been like, boy, if you got Penny and Sparrow on the pod, then I would finally give you all my money. And so we said, frick, like, if that's all it's going to take, we'll get it. So we did it. Today's a really big day. We got Penny and Sparrow on. And Dave, enough of us. Penny, Sparrow, you guys there?
Hello.
There's, there. Yeah, who's
Sparrow? Hello, I'm here too. Yeah.
Tell us
this is, this is he.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the Penny and Sparrow. Like, do you guys get called Penny and Sparrow? Like, one of you's Penny, one of you's Sparrow a lot, or just in not often?
Right now.
Just right now.
I wish that it was all the time. I wish that I could have it legally changed to an ever-fluctuating one of the two. And then and I would have to go to City Hall so often, though, that it would probably be shitty in the long run. Right. So I guess the long and short is, most people think that one of them is one of us and the other one is the other one of us. We simply didn't think that through when we were naming the band.
Right. Well, and part of the problem is Penny's kind of, it's not typically a guy's name. And so it's like, it's Sparrow would just be super awesome.
Like, but Jack. Then,
yeah, like, yeah. Jack. But then Penny's kind of like, who's that? Like, that, who's the girl?
Right. So, and here's a bigger, maybe this could be the first question. I feel comfortable asking this as the first question.
Wow.
If you guys could be Transformers, would you rather be able to transform into a Penny or a Sparrow?
Frustrated.
The answer may seem obvious, but I want to know.
The answer to that.
This is the first time we've been asked this, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As do I.
The answer for me is pretty clear.
Come up yet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we're gonna start with Kyle. Kyle, Penny, or Sparrow?
It's pretty clear that it should be a Penny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So, I mean,
clearly the Penny.
Yeah. While one may think that it should be the Sparrow for the flying capabilities,
right,
and the talons,
and the talons, right. Yeah, right. Maybe even more than flying.
Yeah, imagine if there were some talent seekers that were at your show, and you could show them to them, and then you, there you go.
Is that a thing? Are there like just run of the mill talent seekers in this life?
You're talking to the only two.
Sometimes people miss the T, and they're like, talent? No, we're looking for talons, and then that's good. Okay, so can
my reason for this is so much different than yours. I too would choose the Penny, but only because I feel like a. One of the offshoots of that power is that I could then become. I didn't picture a small Penny. I pictured a giant.
Wow, you could roll around.
Right. Well, but then I would be like the Transformer equivalent of like a giant copper-hued Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
Dang, you threw. I didn't even think about Abraham. That's a great point.
Which, in my mind, to be a giant copper 16th president of the United States would be really impressive and would do better in battle, even though I couldn't fly.
Yeah, because what could break a giant Penny? Like, you would just, it's a wall. And also, imagine coming out from your shows. If, let's say that because you chose Penny, Sparrow, it was all that was left.
I like how even though they're Transformers, they're still playing shows.
Well, this is it. Imagine your intro into the show. Like, one of you rolls out, the other one descends, and then you just change back.
I prefer to think that one of us would be in the other one's talons, so that the talon seekers in the audience would be appeased.
What an epic intro.
The big sparrow would also be giant,
so it could pick up the big penny.
Yeah,
I totally agree. Great.
Is there any way, like, you guys, like, hire an artist and you have them draw this for, like, a future release of sorts?
Well, before tonight, I would have said no. But again, only because I am completely aghast at the lack of this question having come up in other interviews before today. It's such low-hanging fruit. And so the fact that it is just now, you know, breaking in, I'm shocked. But yeah, we're going to now get that put on a t-shirt pretty soon.
Good. Now, and I don't want to keep asking these questions that probably should have been asked but haven't. Talk about how you guys formed.
Oh, boy. Right to the basics.
whoever wants to take that one, go take that one and run with it.
Yeah, and like maybe some like back. How did you guys get into music in the first place before forming? Kind of some.
Oh, that's a good one too, Dave. That's a good one too.
Thanks, Bran.
Kyle, do you want to start and begin with your birth? I think that's where it all begins.
It was a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Rainy Wednesday in Dallas, Texas. My dad looked into my mom's eyes. Said, I love you, darling.
How far back are you going with that?
Hey, play your cards right and it'll be 9 months before you thought.
Oh, wow. That's so
quick
crazy.
Quick math.
Anywho.
He's born right on.
So to get to the question, really, you want to know the origin of Penny and Sparrow as me and Andy playing music, not my birth.
Yeah, you're right.
Unless it's relevant, unless like that's right. When you got the initial inspiration for the Penny. Like you saw both a Penny and a Sparrow in the sky right when you popped out. That would have been relevant. I guess that's relevant.
Andy and I met in college as roommates at University of Texas. His lease went up and needed a place to live, so he just moved in, and we lived in just a disgusting, just awful house of like 12 to 15 guys at a time, and it was just so dirty, and it was great. But Andy lived in a room with me and one other guy, and there shouldn't be three people in that size of a room. And I was learning guitar at the time when I was in school, and so I was just doing covers every once in a while, and Andy would sing to them because his voice is not terrible, and that's pretty much how the initial thing started, is us just kind of messing around. Andy, take over. Popcorn.
We did a lot of Ryan Adams cover songs because that was as in vogue then as it is now. And so we are huge fans.
Summer of 69 and whatnot.
And whatnot, if you will. And we will.
Right.
Uh-huh. And so we would cover a bunch of songs for our friends. Again, like Kyle said, we lived in a house full of roommates and there was always people at our place. And it was fun just to sing. With really no strings attached, just having a good time. And then Kyle, in order to get through grad school, just to have something to blow off steam, kept learning the guitar, kept messing around with singing, and we started writing music together just for the hell of it, just to see what would come out, because we were both on career paths that were not music, and so we just did this as fun, as ancillary parts. Paths? I was working. I had like three jobs. I was piecemealing stuff together. But I guess the main form of employment would have been. I worked at a CrossFit gym for a while in Austin, Texas, and and I had a few other part-time gigs for Young Life and for a church and stuff like that. And then Kyle was working where? Kyle Popcorn.
Nice. I was working at Refugee Services of Texas, nonprofit in Austin.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. So you voted for Donald
Trump.
Gave
up on helping people. You guys gave up on helping people to just go ahead and live musician rock star lives. That's great. So you guys, you can continue on. So you both were initially planning that stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, this is actually working out really well. When did the epiphany come? Like, we should actually kind of do something more than just this is a hobby and actually try and make a go of it.
Well, it was pretty slow going at start. I mean, basically every major milestone in the early days was just out of a desire to check it off a bucket list. Like, hey, let's record a song. All right, cool. Well, why don't we record these little three songs we've had and put them out there? We can have a buddy of ours do the album art just because someday it'd be really funny to show our kids, like, hey, your old man made an album one day.
Right.
With his buddy. And then the first live show was buddies of ours throwing a nonprofit fundraiser, and they needed a band. And we were like, okay, we'll do it. And so we did that because we thought it'd be funny to actually play a live show. And then we played at a few dive bars in Austin for the exact same reasons, because we were like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to actually do a live show with a bunch of covers, because we don't have any songs, and the three that we wrote. And then we sort of blinked and looked up a few years later and realized that we'd been playing multiple shows in Austin, a few in the South, just on weekend trips in between getting off work. And a bunch of people were buying these records that we had put out. And so us and our collective families sort of sat down and were like, hey, if we ever did want to give this a try and see if it would work, we could just stop working and go on the road and see what happens. And we did.
And we just, again, I just want to make sure everyone understands, we were thinking, how can we be more selfish and not help anybody?
Well, yeah, I mean, to your point, though, like, refugees can help themselves.
Totally.
That is the thought pattern of today.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and no, that's exactly right. So, I feel really bad for making that joke, but not bad enough to apologize.
The tongue is firmly in the cheek, and we heard it loud and clear.
Cute.
I like it when you say things. So moving forward,
you really
forward,
have a twist on your favorite sayings. Like, yeah, get a little Penny and Sparrow twist on
right.
it.
So
I'm gonna start saying that. I'm gonna Sparrow that thing.
Oh boy. So going forward, you have this little three song EP, Creature, and you throw that out to the world. So talk about that a little bit and how you guys felt like putting stuff out there, and how you guys were maybe growing. Did you see any growth of people that weren't in your little circle finding these three songs on the internet, or how did the spread of those three songs happen?
Honestly, don't really know. We released it, and I really don't know. We made a YouTube video of us singing it, mm-hmm. and I think that a singing Creature, and I think that maybe people shared on social medias and the internet, and other than that, that's the only thing that I can really think of. And it was really, really cool to get some really encouraging positive feedback, and definitely made us we before we even released Creature had already started writing other songs, and we're kind of interested in doing something full length to see what that would feel like instead of just three songs. And when we got the encouragement to after releasing Creature, it was pretty easy to say, like, oh well, let's just keep going, this is fun.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
good.
We are set free. Chains that hold us, bind us to thee. I'm a new slave, yes, my name has been changed. I'm yours.
And so, at what point did you guys? You said you had a lot of covers up front. And when did it cross over where you started writing a lot more? And what does you guys' writing process look like? Do you guys write separately, or do you guys get together and try and do it at the same time?
It made the shift when we Kickstarted our first full length. Kickstarter was pretty fresh and new at the time that we did Ten Boom, and so we were like, yeah, I think we're liking the process of writing that we engaged in. We enjoyed coming up with our own stuff and trying to impress each other. And so because of that fact, we kickstarted Ten Boom, and it did well enough to let us self-fund Struggle Pretty. And, you know, the snowball kept getting bigger down the hill. But as to your question about how we write, we have our respective camps and waters that we swim in. Kyle's responsible for 99.9 repeating percent of the melody and instrumentation, and bird's eye view of how the song structure and skeleton is going to go start to finish. And my job is words for the most part.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
cool.
Kyle will make countless voice memos of him singing a made-up melody on nonsensical non-words. And he'll send those over to me, and I get to play Mad Gab. And I get to listen to it, count syllables, see what the tone of the song feels like, and say, okay, I've got 24 syllables broken up into roughly three sentences to describe excitement or heartache or fill-in-the-blank emotion.
Right.
And then we get together and run it and sort of then do co-editing in terms of what works.
That's really cool. That's actually unique.
Is that the way you guys write due to being in different states? Like, that's just kind of the easiest way to do it? Or did you guys do that same thing when you were together in college and that's you just carried it?
I feel like every single way has its pros and cons. We've tried everything and done everything and don't really... I feel like we don't really have a preference. I think that right now with living in different states, this works. And doing the voice memo thing works really well for us because I can immediately, even if we're not together at any point, I can get something down and just send it straight to him and see if he likes it. And if he is immediately drawn to it, then he can immediately start writing. So for that, it's amazing. Of course, being in the same room is always really great because you can kind of play off each other's energy. But we get to do that later on in the process after a song is basically done. I think the only negative that comes up is if the song gets finished on melody and lyrics and we haven't sat down to actually run it together, and then we run it live and both of us are kind of like, well, you know what? That didn't work as well as I thought it was going to when we both played it live, and we have to figure out how to fix it at that point.
Right.
But really, that's the only negative I can come up with to how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Andy, you kind of mentioned the Kickstarter thing. So talk a little bit about that. That was your first, Tin Bloom was your first big release. So talk about how you guys decided to go with the Kickstarter thing and how you guys felt like that went.
The first part. Part A of that question is quite simple. We didn't have any money.
Right.
And we needed, from what we understood, the rudimentary research we had done, making albums requires money.
Yeah, in theory.
That's very true, in theory. And granted, we didn't, it's not like we raised a shit ton. We raised enough to make Tin Bloom because we knew a producer that was incredibly talented and was willing to. Not only was he Kyle's friend from growing up, but I got adopted into that friendship, and we all three worked together at his home studio in San Antonio. But the process of Kickstarter was really some of the rebar that this house is built on to begin with. I mean, without that record, we wouldn't have been able to make the next record, Struggle Pretty. And without that record and the songs on it, I don't feel like we would have had the confidence to continue writing songs, and the feedback that people gave us on that record was good enough to encourage us forward. So that was in a lot of ways a linchpin, and we owe Kickstarter actually a very specific monetary debt that we've already paid back. But aside from that, it was a really, really cool thing that for such a time as this, we were coming up in the music world at the exact time that was an in vogue thing to do, was to crowdsource creative material. And right, so it benefited us a great deal.
Yeah, was still at the, I mean, Kickstarter is all or nothing, right? So was that like a kind of a scary thing, like asking people for this money and not sure if you're actually going to get all of it?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the things that was like, well, I guess people are going to either put their money where their mouth is and we'll figure out if it was just empty encouragement from people that are blood relatives or it's... there's actually human beings out there that wouldn't mind if we kept going. And
right.
There was more than enough of those humans to give us the finances to do the record.
Thank God for humans.
And a crazy thing there is that a lot of times I see the Kickstarters happening in terms of in the music world. A lot of times it'll happen later in a band's kind of discography when they're trying to make a comeback or something like that. Where they already have the following, but to start strong with it it makes it more that much more impressive that you were able to kind of like reach the tentacles out far enough to get enough money to pull in at the beginning when really all you had to work with at the time was a 3-song EP. And I guess your live presence.
No. We didn't know that we had tentacles, let alone how far they would reach. So it was a very nice thing to find out that we had enough to write a full-length record.
We're just really good at guilting our friends into anonymously giving.
That really is good.
It's a good skill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like you said, that kind of that album, once you were able to release it, it kind of boosted you forward into what would kind of happen later. So what was it like after releasing that album? How did that change the experience doing like touring and going to shows? Did you find that there was a lot more people that were not only showing up, but that knew the songs, were like the atmosphere changed there?
Kyle, you remember specifically what it was like after Ten Boom to tour? Like, do you feel like there was a big growth?
No, I would say overall, we've just been really slow and steady from the get-go.
Okay.
Which I think is a pretty cool thing. I feel like anywhere we go, we just played a bunch of new cities that we played to pretty small crowds, and it's fun to know that we'll get to go back there, and next time we go back there, hopefully the crowd will grow just a little bit and we can play in a little bit bigger of a room. But that's exactly how it was starting in Austin. We played in, I feel like the first thing we did after Tin Boom was play a house show to, like, I don't know, maybe 40 people. And then within a couple months, it bumped up to 100. And then a couple months after that, it bumped to 200. And then we started touring outside of Austin after that. But
that's super cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it's always been. No matter the city.
Yeah.
And I just saw that you were in Asheville, North Carolina, and somehow I missed it, and now I'm sad.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, man.
I'm upset you didn't make a personal declaration of hoping for me.
We didn't want to seem too needy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We want you to want us, but we don't want to like be a floozy.
Oh, it was sold out. It was sold out. That's why I didn't come. That's what I remember now. Yeah, it wasn't because I didn't know. It was just because I couldn't.
You guys, Asheville is like exactly the place where I feel that the soundtrack could be you guys. Like, that place is probably just waiting to sell out your show.
Because it's weird, or what do you mean?
No, I've never even been there, so I don't know. This doesn't mean anything to anyone that I'm saying this, but when I picture when I picture Asheville, I just picture pennies and sparrows everywhere, all over, littering the streets and the skies.
Very accurate.
Just so much change.
Post-apocalyptic. It's kind of terrible.
Yeah, it's like Alfred Hitchcock's Birds.
It's just discarded small change and avian corpses. That's all it is.
Wow.
Terrifying.
Did you by chance,
that's why you write the lyrics, because he would just do like a word, and then you're like, how about aviary corpses?
That's the only reason.
That's precisely why it's my job.
Yeah. Before we move on, though, while you were in Asheville, did you see the Spoon Lady on the streets by any chance?
Spoon Lady?
I miss the Spoon Lady.
Dude. The only reason to go to Asheville is to see the Spoon Ladies. There's this lady who's on the streets, like, on the regular.
Oh, and I know who you're talking
about. She plays the crap out of the spoons. Like, I've never, in all of my days, multiple spoons. She's got bells that she kind of hits with her feet. It's a real neat thing to enjoy. So,
you know what's interesting about the fact that you bring that up is at first I was like, that sounds ridiculous. We definitely didn't see it this time. And then I remember going there with the Delta Ray folks, or it might have been Drew, like months and months and months ago. And it was outside of that restaurant that we had brunch at, Kyle. Do you remember that? And it was in that near the two bookstores, the Captain's Bookshelf and the one that we went to last time we were there.
We did see the Spoon Lady?
I didn't know it until now, but there was a woman barefoot playing spoons.
There sure was.
Jug band trio.
There sure was.
Oh, yeah.
And, dude, she's a freaking legend. She's a legend.
Well, I believe that.
I don't know why I'm getting so passionate about the Spoon Lady. I apologize.
We need to get her on here, Brand.
Evidently.
Yeah. If you'd like to pivot and only talk about her for the remainder of our time, I'm interested so I can ask the questions.
Oh boy, and Brand knows the answers.
As
clearly.
As intrigued as I am to see where you'd go with it, we'll pivot back and then possibly pivot once more towards the end.
Oh boy. Look at this pivot. Zigzaggity zig.
Right. Okay. So go into sophomore. Lots of people say sophomore slump, but you said sophomore nope. With
that is what we said.
Oh, what?
I
don't
I just spoon ladied that so good.
And I know you, and I'm not going anywhere, because I've seen.
You put out struggle pretty and struggle pretty you did. So talk about that follow up and how you just kind of I guess like the fact that you have to follow up something for the first time, like was there pressure there? Did you feel any pressure there to, oh man, we gotta one up this last release? Do we feel like we have to continue to grow? Or was it just like, this feels good. It's a natural growth type thing, as you've kind of talked about growing slow and steady.
My first response, Kyle may see eye to eye or not, I'm not sure, but I know for a fact that we were not yet full-time musicians when we were recording Struggle Pretty. We still weren't even, we knew that we were trying it more seriously than we had been on Tin Boom. That was for certain, but we hadn't quit our day jobs.
Right. So you were still helping the refugees at that point.
Yeah. We were still doing good things.
Right. Good.
We were still good people.
Humanitarian things.
Right.
Yeah.
But that said, I don't feel like there was pressure, because it wasn't like our music career was, hanging in the balance. If anything, it was like, oh, hey, I think we have enough to do this again, and we've learned a lot from the first experience, and we've got all these other songs we've been writing all along because we enjoy it. So to have joy and encouragement and excitement be your engines behind a creative project is a really cool deal, because there wasn't a whole lot of fear in the making of that record, like wonder or worry whether or not it was going to, end up in us breaking, because we weren't considering that or even trying to consider that.
Sure.
So it was a delightful surprise that it topped Tin Boom and did so much better than we imagined it could.
Sure. And Kyle, from a musical perspective, talk about writing another batch of songs musically. Like I don't know what it's like to just come up with a song musically. Like, I feel like I'm not a very good musician. I'm not a very good songwriter, but I try to do both of them at the same time. I can't not. So from someone who's just mainly focuses on the music side of it and maybe the melodies, what was it like creating a whole new batch of songs from scratch that was trying to be a little bit different and grow upon your first release?
One of the things that we talk about often, Andy and I, is to do each album a little bit different than the last. And that's something I think we had ingrained in us pretty early, just like trying different things. And even if it's subtly different, in this one, just me and our producer and Andy all just kind of went into it with the idea of, for the most part, just having more instruments and having a lot of our friends play on the record. And that's kind of what we went into production-wise, probably even before the album song-wise was finished. So I'm sure, without even recognizing it, the song process changed a little bit. I would say overall, it's pretty. It doesn't change much the way Andy and I write it. Every song I feel like can get stripped back down to just Andy and I.
Right.
But definitely wrote some parts knowing, oh man, that's going to sound really cool with Alex, our buddy, to send it to him and see if he wants to add anything here and make it as communal as possible. And yeah, so that's what we ended up doing for that one. Writing it, I don't think changed a ton of the way that I wrote it or that Andy wrote it at that time. I think it was more just being having fun with it and letting our friends get to be part of it.
Yeah, cool.
That's cool. And so you guys have a specific person, you said Andy, that you work with to kind of add on the, does he produce some of that, or does he just kind of like send his portion and then you guys mix it in?
So Chris is the producer and he does a lot of the instruments. Right. And then Alex is the other guy that I just mentioned. And,
oh, okay.
And yeah. Alex is another really good long-term friend of mine. Went to high school with him. And he plays his strings, and so he does all our strings and arranging, and so we'll just, he's in Atlanta, and we'll just send him an email with it, and he just goes for it and sends us some stuff back. He is so great. Yeah.
And I don't know if you're looking for anyone else. There's this lady in Asheville. She plays the spoons. And
oh, pivot.
Unreal good.
And you have me.
So you guys, continuing what you were talking about, you kind of continued after your Kickstarter, you kind of boosted forward and had continued success from there, like a domino effect. So after the release of your second full length, you guys were able to land a deal with Single Lock Records, co-founded by John Paul White from the Civil Wars and Ben Tarrant from Alabama Shakes. So what was that experience like? Were you guys just... I can't even imagine what that must have been like coming from where you were. How did you guys transition into that?
It felt amazing. I mean, they became fast friends with us. The experience of recording was totally different, totally new, unlike any of the other times that we had made records. It wasn't like we were super tenured along the way, but it added its total different shape and sized brick in the wall of our young career. And it was also really cool to be... Before we became fast friends, we were pretty starstruck early on because we were guys that whose music we had listened to when we were doing day jobs and we're not doing music. So it was a really, really big deal.
Right.
We learned a lot from them. We made a record with them that we're proud of. It was a crazy experience that ended up finding my wife and I the city that we now live in and call home because we had to move here to record for a little bit.
To shake up Alabama.
Yeah. And so the fact that we now live in northern Alabama is hilarious, and it's a complete product of us moving down here for a small season, or at least that was the intent, to record this last record. And it was great, man. That made the whole journey worth it, let alone the fact that we got a great record out of it, and we're super proud to call these people and this place kin to us.
Yeah. Does it hurt at all knowing that we're only interviewing you so that we might interview John Paul, like, as a result, or are you kind of used to that?
Yeah, we know what we get into.
Hyper aware.
So if you could send me those digis.
I can do that. Yeah. We'll do that.
Thanks for that.
His personal cell. I'll send you his Skype account number. And
you can holler at him. It will be way easier than getting Kyle on this call was.
Oh, God.
I was fine.
Yeah, I think it was me that caused all the problems.
That's absolutely true.
Again, in terms of time, yeah.
Things are boiling that down. I needed it. My insecurity wasn't already peaked. I appreciate
it. It was. Dude, you're living in Alabama. It's the place to just let insecurity go and just chill out and shake. So I'm going to use that. Yeah.
So Kyle, musically, talk about how having those guys around co-producing that new LP, talk about how that helped you and shaped you as a musician.
With the most recent, Let a Lover Drown You? That's the one. It was so annoying to watch these guys be so good at what they do.
Right.
We both learned, Andy and I feel like both learned so much getting the song right with John and getting to watch John and Ben just kind of have fun in the studio. It was awesome. I feel like this was one of the only records that we've done that I felt like I wanted to be a little bit more hands off. Same with Andy, just so that we could see how I feel like we just had a lot to learn. Everything that we had done was kind of on an island. I had no idea what we were doing outside of like in the music business at this point.
Right.
And so we just got to see him, work, learned how to not be, too complicated in songs, learned that simplicity is really smart, and goes way longer away
yeah.
in
yeah.
production.
Sure. And talk a little bit about like how looking back at this one versus your first one, Kickstarter versus being signed, like what are some of the differences that are great and wonderful and relieving, but also maybe anything that might be more difficult than it is just doing it on your own?
I would say I'll give you one example of each. A great thing and one of the things that's more difficult.
Yeah.
A great thing is that we had enough records under our belt and enough of a touring career under our belt at the time to realize like, oh my gosh, we can really take ourselves seriously. Like that's an encouraging thing. Mm. Like everyone, regardless of how you define having made it, quote unquote, like there is a legitimate sustained career in music that was happening for us and that couldn't be taken away. That was a really, really awesome thing. And so for us to be sitting there in the studio with John Paul and Ben, these like no shit heroes of ours in terms of talent and craft mm-hmm. and just the type of men they are. The type of husband and father I want to be at some point, looking at the life of John Paul, it's easy to hang that mantle on him as a compliment because he's done it so well. And that's awesome. I would say, so the good thing is we sort of had these pinch me moments in the studio for Let a Lover Drown You. We're like, man, we're really doing it. Like we are getting to be in this position alone is a compliment enough to the music that we've made and how people feel about it.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a good thing. I would say the hard part is we weren't so tenured that we knew what the hell we were doing. Like there was still, we were fraught with insecurity being around these heroes. Like it took us a while to acclimate because everything up until that time had just been Kyle and I and Chris. And we were all looking at each other being like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And we would just fly by the seat of our pants together. Whereas with those guys, like, they knew their shit, man.
Yeah.
And so it took a bit for us to acclimate to realizing, like, okay, we don't need to be timid. We don't need to be bashful and speak in our opinion or our mind. And so that was a hard thing because when you record it, just Kyle and I, like, we know each other to a fault really, 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 really well. Like, reading micro expression, tiny peccadilloes are memorized in between us. And so with them, it's a whole new dynamic with two different people. Yeah, and yeah. Like I said, we ended the project, and somewhere in the middle, we looked up and realized that we were family to them and vice versa. But that process is different with any new human that you add.
Right.
And so that has its own getting used to that it requires.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I think that getting confidence up around heroes was a surprisingly hard task, or just something I wasn't at all expecting. It took a minute to kind of calibrate and get used to really, I think that it probably would have happened with anybody. I feel like John was probably one of the guys we would have said and still would say, if you gave us a carte blanche option to work with somebody, he would be like the top of the list. And so it was just crazy getting to work with someone like that. But I think really anybody who comes into a really vulnerable situation like songwriting, you're just going to be insecure. Or at least I know that's just kind of Andy and I's MO in music is trying to fight against that and be confident in what we're doing. But that was definitely something to learn and deal with in the record.
Right. For sure. Now, last John Paul question. But how long did you guys go in your relationship before you felt comfortable asking him why the Civil Wars broke up?
I'll let you know when we ask.
Yeah.
Oh boy. It's no time for a Civil War like after making a great album.
Go away, Dave. No one wants to hear about that.
I will say this to your question, that's not an answer whatsoever, but it will be shining a bit more light on the type of man that he is. He was the type of human who was slow to speak, and when he did talk about anything that he had learned from the road, it was so golden that like everyone just sort of shut up and listened, paid attention, because he had seen not only more life than us, but he's a husband and a father multiple times over. And so this is something that he has trod areas that one day I hope to. And so you pay attention to that. It only made it better that not only had he been in those situations and scenarios before us, but I'm looking at this man and realizing, like, man, I'd be very happy if I ended up looking like him. And I don't mean physically. I think
that too.
But
he's got a lot to learn from you in that area.
Yeah, let me tell you, receding hairline and all.
CrossFit.
Yeah, it's fun to call him friend and to know that. When you meet this, sometimes you meet your heroes and they don't live up to the standard that you've set. And he crushed whatever standard I had, which was awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I'm going to follow up what Kyle said about you crushing that last question. And I just have this is a totally ridiculous question. But Andy, did you ever get less than an A on an essay question test? Because your ability to answer two-part questions is, like, unbelievable. It's like, you set it up, like, okay, I've got two answers. This one's going to be this one. It's great.
So I did okay on the essay portions, and I forgot how to long divide last month.
So whatever that
tells you about my personality, I'll let you derive it yourself.
Ooh, there you go. See, you're deriving even now after your failed attempts at division. This is the question about your most recent release, which was the Christmas album.
Holly
Jolly. Was this something you'd been wanting to do for a while, kind of since you were doing covers? I don't know if you've had played Christmas covers in the past, or is this something that kind of came out of the blue on a whim?
That's like the Christmas spirit. You couldn't keep it in.
Sometimes you just can't contain that Christmas spirit when you record an album.
No, you can't.
In San Antonio in July. It just is. It's just among you. So, it's just something we'd always wanted to do. I feel like we've done a couple songs that were on it, regardless of season, just because I think they're killer songs, really good. And just had people say, you know what, you guys should do a Christmas album, and we said, you know what, we should, and then we did, and then we released it, and now we're talking about it.
Were you worried with Come Thou Fount being the first song on the Christmas album, were you worried people would put it on and be like, what the, like, this isn't what I hoped for, Christmas-wise, or, you know?
Honestly, again, because, I don't know, maybe we just felt confident that if you hadn't run away because we were so strange and what we had released was strange enough by now, then you probably weren't going to run away at whatever we did to Christmas music. So we had a certain degree of confidence that it's almost like looking at our fans that honestly is a huge compliment to them. But if you've come this far with us, why don't you come a little bit further and we'll get a little bit weirder and we'll continue to get strange and be ourselves. And if you're into that, then you're into that. And thankfully, it seems to be that enough people have come along that we're going to get to keep making music for a while. The Christmas album was no different. We didn't do anything. I mean, we kept experimenting and trying stuff that we thought would be fun or funny or strange and ridiculous, and feel like we did that pretty well.
Yeah. So
I got something, Brand, real quick, because there's one song that I was really expecting to hear on the Christmas album, and I know you guys didn't fit it in this year, but I can only imagine that you're going to be doing this next year. And you guys have seen the movie Elf, I assume. Okay. The great Louis Prima track, Pennies from Heaven. I just don't see why you wouldn't release Penny and Sparrow version. Like, Penny and Sparrow, shoo-be-doo. Like, it's if you talk about low-hanging fruit, yeah. That one.
Well, when we record that one for next year, just have your people contact us. We'll give you the finder's fee or whatever royalty you need for suggesting this.
Just hearing it will be reward enough.
It okay, is just too good
we
an
have
idea.
That recorded, and that's a verbal contract. Yeah. That's
okay.
So. Dave is the worst businessman.
Yeah, it's so true. And yet but guess what my job is? I'm an accountant, so.
That's great. That's awesome. Started that question.
Talk about day jobs.
I thought you were going to ask why they didn't do Christmas shoes.
No. Oh, God, you guys, though, if there was ever a band that could really just make me cry even more listening to that song, no, listen, like, if there was an artist that could make me cry, it's Penny and Sparrow, and if there's a song that could make me mad cry, it's that song. So you guys playing that song, I'm not sure what could happen to people that listen to it.
Look, if you can't shed a Yuletide tear to the harrowing journey outside of a Payless shoe store, and I think, honestly, our rendition of it might be a Rasta, like, OAR vibe.
Yes.
And I feel like when we do that for the next Christmas record, no one's going to see it coming. Steel drums.
Yeah, there's not enough Jack Johnson Christmas records.
No, not enough.
Is there Feliz Navidad is the only one that really comes to mind in those situations, but I think you guys could really pull Christmas shoes into the mix.
Because Mama wants to look beautiful when she goes to see Jesus tonight. You know?
Even hearing you say it there is just too much.
Like, I wanna sit that child down and talk about that and like how it doesn't make sense, like, theologically, but like also I don't know if it's the right time. So still trying to I'm still trying to figure all that out.
And I'll go you one further and say, we don't know what it's like over there. We don't know if maybe those shoes transfer. Maybe there's a little rollover minutes in terms of your garb. We don't know. Sure. Nobody knows, man.
Yeah. Right. Until you've walked a mile in Christmas shoes, you don't know what that kid's thinking.
Yeah. I think I, for one, am with the kid in this picture.
I'm so sorry I brought that into question. I feel awful. And
well, Brent, I did bring up Louis Prima, Pennies from Heaven, like out of my butt. So I don't think that you should feel bad.
Please don't. Here's the last one for you, fellas. Christmas is over. Spring is here. Spring has sprung. And you're doing some touring. Talk about when people can expect something new on the horizon from you. What you guys thinking? And what are you doing?
Okay, here we are. Spring 2017 with my boy Andy. It's sprung. We're on the road. Just played some shows in the Southeast. Coming home. Gonna play some Texas shows. What? What's going on there? Oh my gosh, did we work on a new record? Maybe. I don't remember. Because it's a metal record. Just straight screamo.
What?
Yeah.
That's right.
Changes
up. It's a type of metal.
Yes, it's a copper record.
Ooh, yeah.
No, just touring and writing. That's it. There's no way to make it exciting. It's just
we have finished or are not finished. We are still working on another record, but we've got a lot of it tracked, and that's really exciting, and I'm not sure when it's going to be ready, but we have been working on one, and you'll hear it someday, I think.
Yeah, here's what we want you to give us the promise. Promise that when you're thinking about releasing it, you come back on and you share a little of it with us, because that's what we want.
That'd be awesome.
I will say yes to that, and if Kyle, do I have your yes as well?
My yes is there.
Yeah, and just know... And just know, like, that offer extends also to John Paul. And I know I keep saying it, but, you know, just know it's there.
Yeah, I will most certainly extend that via, I'll DM him on MySpace, and I'll let you know when he gets back.
Shoot, man, this could happen tomorrow at that rate.
Yeah, indeed.
Dave, before we sign off, do you want to ask that one question that you wrote in a follow-up email to me? Or?
Oh, yeah. So I asked two friends of mine, I said, hey, we're going to be doing this one, the one that you guys have been waiting for, this because they're big fans. And I said, they're females, so that should help in getting to this one. And so they wanted to know what it is about your music that like that you're able to stand out in such a like, see, I don't want to use the word they use, a sensual, sexy way.
Don't say your sensual. Music has,
No, because I think that that's the thing I would actually prefer to say about their music. Okay, so
here, this is
the example that was given to me. They're listening to whatever radio station it is that you guys would come on. Like, and I don't even know what other artists that would be necessarily, because I don't know how, because you guys could fit in a couple of
things. So like a Maroon 5 station?
A radio station, like a Pandora, probably, something like this.
Yeah, definitely a Pandora.
Okay. Yeah, you came out on the top 20. And they said that, you know, you're just having this good, like, kind of a indie acoustic, and all of a sudden one of you guys' song comes on, and they just, like, you turn your head and go, wait a second, what's going on here? It's like this vibe has changed. So the question is, does that come natural, or is this on purpose that you guys just, like, I mean, let's like, with Duet, that song just is, like, there it is. It just, it's here.
Like, hey, it's sex.
Oh.
I'll ask the question.
Yeah, I was like, you probably should have. I wasn't really even sure what the hell we were talking about.
Yeah, here's the question. Andy, does it make you uncomfortable that sometimes I have sex to your music with my wife?
100% no.
Okay.
Oh, so so
especially if it's good sex. That's even better.
So talk about it. Do you guys go out and just say, "Man, let's write another song for the bedroom," or is it just like a natural, like easy boom boom?
Oh man.
Easy boom boom.
Well, the cool thing about that is Kyle is the one who comes up with melody and I'm the one that comes up with words, and so maybe we're just naturally inadvertently exuding erotic.
Oh,
yes.
Oh my gosh, the chromosomes that you guys offer here.
So the way that we typically start the songwriting process is Andy's usually the big spoon and I'm the little spoon. And so I think we just we kind of let that energy just marinate. Yeah. And then we just start writing, and I guess that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it ever in that position?
Please, no.
I wasn't sure how much of that our process we were going to divulge, but now that the cat's out of the bag.
We usually don't talk about this.
That is the fertile crescent, if you will, of our creative process.
That's right.
Dude, you just gave away our album name.
Is that us being together and creating out of that? And I think that's
pretty great. Were you worried about putting the word fertile in there in that analogy?
100%. And after I left my mouth, I was equal parts grossed out and really pumped.
Oh, pumped, huh? Right. Yeah. I mean, Daddy needs his music. That's the thing. And
And speaking of spooning, do you want to end the interview with one more question about the spoon lady, or are you good on that front?
I think if I give Kyle enough time, he will come up with one of his own. But I would like to ask each of you just a rapid fire one quick question so that we can turn the tables for a moment.
No one has done this, and it's the only reason we keep going, because we're waiting for this moment.
Penny and Sparrow interviewing.
Any one of us answers, or are we going to take turns? How do we?
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pose the question, and then I'm going to give you my example answer to give you just a little bit more time to come up with one yourself.
And then we'll go clockwise, Bran, by nation, where we are in the country.
Okay, so you're 12 o'clock, I'm 5 o'clock. Easy. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question, including my answer, is this. If there was a song right now that you had to put into the hands of a music lover who loved music the way that you did, but you were almost certain that no one had ever heard of it before, or the vast majority of people hadn't heard of it before, what would that song be? Its title and its artist, please. Mine would be Cosmic American by Anais Mitchell.
Okay, good.
Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes by Paul Simon.
Wow, good. There's a band called Towers, and they were on the last episode of Your Next Favorite Band, and they have a new album coming out, and it's amazing, the whole thing. Anybody should listen to it.
Is there a song specifically on that record?
Oh, sorry, your question. I don't know the titles as good as I should. One second. Here we go. Are you ready for it? Here it comes.
Lightning, lightning right. search round.
Yeah. Here it comes right now. It is called Constellations. That's the song. Constellations by Towers.
All right, great. All right. Boom. Thank you for fielding Andy's portion of the lightning round. Now on to Kyle's.
Hello. Welcome to the lightning round favorites portion. Are you both ready?
Oh.
Favorite animal.
Do you? Are you going to go first?
No, it's you said clockwise.
I know, but in the previous one, Andy said that he would answer as an example, and I need an example.
You're right.
Animal.
Dolphin.
So that I can. Dolphin?
That's just an example.
Okay. Yeah. I was making sure I got it right. Okay, well, mine's actually easy. Octopus, hands down. I mentioned tentacles earlier. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah, kangaroo, pouches.
Yeah, just the pouch?
Just the pouch portion.
Yeah, perfect. Just velvety. Into it.
Yep. There could be no better answer than kangaroo pouch for favorite animal. Thank you so much.
Yeah. The pouch.
I guess I technically said tentacles.
Yeah, so, tentacles are...
I like it.
We don't really like animals as a whole. We just like them for their parts.
Yeah, you like the mechanisms. Yeah.
Should have worded it.
But isn't the part just the sum of its... hey. yeah. I love to eat the pouch of a Kang.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kang. You guys are fun to love, too.
Hey,
thanks for the questions. It really was a twist for us.
That's what I wanted. How can people get at you, and then we'll say goodbyes?
Pennyandsparrow.com and all the social media things that are fairly normal. We do the Instagram and the Facebook and the Twitter and all that stuff. But come see a show and see what you think.
Great.
Fantastic.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Bye. Thank y'all. Y'all are great.
World, I know you're clothed in the sunlight and your flesh. So I bring the breeze in, then you need to close up all the rest. Your shoulders shone and makeup thickened till there's nothing left. I still see you. I still see you. You're gonna learn me. You're gonna learn me. Only hopefully. Don't fold your hands and go to sleep. You're going hungry. You never need be. Only need me. Wear an empty dressed up finery.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.